This podcast is sponsored by WorthPoint. Find out what your antiques are worth at WorthPoint.com. Okay, I'm in sunny California with a longtime friend and antique extraordinaire estate sale and recently nouveau author, Martin Codina. How are you, Martin?
I'm excellent, Martin. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for having me here on your show.
Yeah, I know I'm having two authors in a row here. You're a special guy to me because we worked together for a little while, and I had a lot of fun going into all these wonderful, beautiful estates in San Francisco and looking for more or less items that made sense to go into auction or not, and it was a real pleasure. And we did that for about a year or so, I think.
We did.
Yeah.
And you definitely had a great perspective to add to an estate liquidator's toolbox for how to best sell personal property, so you're definitely an asset.
Well, thank you. Sometimes I thought a little too much about auction and couldn't see the other side of it. But and we've had a lot of laughs about that. So
yeah, it's hard to keep your eye on the prize in this business, which is the maximization of the personal property of an estate, and to realize that some things really can be sold for quite a lot of money in an on-site estate sale. If you come from one milieu or the other, you don't understand the other milieu.
So. That's right. That's right. And, you know, there's something to be said about an item being sold where it lived.
Yeah. Well, there's the thing about auctions are great when you have a particular kind of item whose value can only be understood by a crowd, whose value can only be realized through the competitive bidding process. That's fine to take that outside of the content of a house or the context of a house. It's understood outside of the context of a house.
Yeah.
But a piece, really, you know, a nice couch, a nice dining room set, they're much more understood as being nice dining room furniture or living room furniture inside of a house.
In their setting.
So context is really helpful to selling personal property and realizing a good amount of money. And that's best done in a house, as you're kind of pointing out.
Yeah. Now, we're going to talk about your book that is just out called Liquidating an Estate. And it's a wonderful book. I really liked. Now, I've just breezed through it. I'm not going to lie and say I read it because I just got this book yesterday. It's illustrated. There's a lot of really good bullet points that really draws you in. And very well thought out when you put this book together. Again, we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But I wanted to ask you, what got you started? It's always a fascinating story. Most of the time, anyway, of how people get started in this business. What sparked your interest?
I mean, when you talk about an origin story, like what got you started with something? There's the obvious, like that. You know, I was buying and selling furniture in San Francisco, vintage furniture, and I got really into it, and I realized I could make money doing this, and so I started an estate liquidation company because I was buying and selling and picking furniture.
Now, what got you started in that, though, to begin with?
Well, I was a painting contractor in San Francisco. I painted Victorians, mansions. I painted for all those wealthy people, and I did these amazing things with faux finishes and just, you know, restoring surface. Everything to me was surface. What's the surface of this thing? And that led me to doing it on furniture, and that led me to buying old, discarded furniture. And then that led me to selling the furniture without having to work on the furniture. But see, you could say that that's how I got into it. Or you could realize that there's always a deeper story under the sort of superficial story. And the deeper story is that as a child, when I would go into museums and I would see all this old, old stuff and try to understand the story that was behind the old stuff, like, how was the couch used? How were those eyeglasses worn? Why are those eyeglasses? How come there's only one? Why? What's the difference between a monocle and a pair of spectacles? Why would one wear one like that? So the story, I became fascinated with the story of old things at a very, very young age. And that slowly but surely percolated into, you know, when I started buying and selling this furniture, which was all about the dough. I didn't care about anything. I started to care. Actually, I started to care a little bit about the story that was in each piece of furniture. Mm-hmm. There seemed to be a story. Like, this came out of a house in Belvedere by a little old lady, and she had gray hair, and I bought whatever. There's always a story connected.
Mm-hmm.
It's the resonant. It's the resonance that antiques have or collectibles have or the story that they have that still fascinates me today.
Yes.
So that's how I got into it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I stay here in this business, is because of the story.
Really? Now, you know, I don't think I've ever heard anyone say that. A lot of people say they're, and I'm in it a lot. I love the history of things as well. But I love the treasure hunt, and it doesn't mean that I'm going to get the treasure for myself. When I'm thinking the auction way, I'm going to get part of the treasure for a commission. But I love the exploring of it, and, you know, the stories also are interesting. But you never know what's around the corner in the business, do you?
Of course, the treasure thing is part of it. It's.
Are we having our first argument?
No. This is, we've had many arguments here, folks. Treasure's integral, you know. It's part of the why anybody in this business is in this business. But how you sell a treasure, why it's a treasure, is because of the story. All right? It's the connection that others make.
Yes.
Right? To the item that creates it as a treasure. We're treasure hunters, sure. But we're hunting something that's got a very good story connected to it.
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing that's going to sell for $1 bazillion.
You know, in the last podcast, for a regular listener out there, with Maureen Stanton, that part of the business came up, the story. And when it loses its story, it loses its value. And so it's interesting that this is going into another podcast with a very similar thought. Let's talk about the general, if you want to say, synopsis of your book.
It's a book that is going to teach people, mostly family members who find themselves in the situation of having to deal with taking care of the personal property of their loved ones. It's going to put them through the various challenges that they're going to face. And this book is solution-oriented. And it teaches the solutions to these situations with story. So I've got 20 primary stories in the book that show things that turned out to be treasures that were found in average people's homes and how it was best to take care of those particular items. So they're all object lessons. So it's going to teach you what to do with the personal property in a house through story. Now, I love story, so and I have a lot of stories. I've been fortunate as an estate liquidator to have found a great many wonderful, amazing things, and have turned each one of those into an object lesson to help people figure out what to do when they're faced with a similar situation. So it's got that component in it. It also has the component of people think they can read a book like this and start their own estate liquidation business. And so I have in there a whole chapter for people who think they want to start their own business. It's like, okay, you want to start your own business? What's the very first thing, the most important thing that you can bring to your business? What is that? And for me, it's to care about people and their problems.
Exactly. The one thing that people can neglect to think about is all the emotions that go on when someone has to liquidate a loved one's estate. All these little things in here. We just saw this. I'm just going to say where we're at here. We're at Connor McCrory's first estate sale out in Southern California, in La Cañada, California. And Martin and I met up here and I've been watching him at his first estate sale. And the woman that was here, you know, it's rather an emotional thing for anyone. And when you're talking about care, a lot of times you can forget about that. And when you're looking at numbers and things, but it's very important. I agree with you.
Yeah, the pursuit of money, if you want to get involved in the estate liquidation business because of money, fine. The only way to really stay in the estate liquidation business and flourish in the estate liquidation business, though, is to care about people and their problems, care about people and their challenges. So there's a chapter in the book that deals with people who want to get involved in the estate liquidation business. And there's also a how-to guide, a really, really important how-to guide to conducting your own estate sale in the book. It's a 10-step guide. And that's really designed for people who have estates that are too small to attract the attention of estate liquidators. An estate liquidator needs an estate that's worth minimum $7,000, $9,000, $10,000 minimum in most parts of the country. And if your estate is worth $2,000-$3,000, they don't want to help you because they really can't afford to help you.
Right.
And what are you going to do? You have an estate. You can't afford to donate $2,000 or $3,000 worth of personal property. You actually need the money, right? Mm. In this book, you can actually know what to do. There's 10 steps that I go through. Every single one of my estate sales go through these 10 steps. Mm. And it's really well laid out in the book. So that's another primary component of the book.
And these are all things that we always have to learn things when you're learning on your own the hard way. And this is going to save someone a lot of that trouble. If they, you know, I highly recommend this book for someone, even if you're not in this position. Most people do get in this position sooner or later.
Every year, this is a really serious thing. And if you're listening to this, it'd be really helpful if you would pass the word out, pass the word around about this book. Not just so I can sell a bunch of books, which would be nice, but it's because there are 2 million people who pass away each and every year in America. And each of those 2 million people have some level of personal property connected to their estate. So that means there are 2 million families that have to know something about what to do with the personal property in their house. And if you go and you try to find that information somewhere online, you will find there's almost nothing written about what to do. I'm talking about the nuts and bolts of what to do. EstateSales.net, it currently is listing somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 estate sales a month. And that's only one listing site for estate sales. There's a lot of estate sales going on a monthly basis across the country.
Now, how about someone that just wants to do their own yard sale? Can they pick up any tips out of this?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the research tips in the book are very, very, very helpful. The advertising tips, okay, so you want to do your own garage sale or estate sale or, you know, garage sale, yard sale, sidewalk sale, where do you advertise it? That's explained in the book. If you have, you know, 10 items that you might want to put in a yard sale, but you're not sure of their value, how you might find out the value of those 5 or 10 items is in the book. The how to do that is in the book. So there's a lot of resources in the book, even for somebody that wanted to do their little, you know, yard sale. There's also personality profiles of the kinds of people that you would meet if you did your own estate sale, if you did your own garage sale, if you did your own yard sale. You know, it's like, who's going to show up at your door? What kind of people are these people going to be? What kind of pro pickers are going to suddenly show up, you know, smelling like tobacco and coffee and, you know, rummaging through your stuff with their bad attitudes? And sometimes they're not bad attitudes, but sometimes they're really bad and surly. Yeah. And they're like, what kind of, you know, junk is this? Who are you going to meet? So that helps you understand, well, do I really want to do my own garage sale? Do I want to do my own estate sale? Do I want these people in my house? Would I rather have an intermediary, an estate liquidator or an auctioneer take care of this for me?
And one of the things I read in the book briefly last night was, and I'd like to elaborate on this, is that by not hiring that estate sale person or that auctioneer, you may be giving away a lot of money. The elaboration is, there are thousands of people that make a very good living on people's mistakes.
Absolutely. I mean, the reason why American Pickers is so popular is because these guys know how to see treasure where everybody else just sees stuff, just sees junk. You can go through a drawer full of your mom's costume jewelry and decide it's all just costume jewelry, put it in a bag, sell it for $10, and not realize that you have 30 pieces of unmarked gold.
Yes.
Gold is notoriously unmarked. It's incredible how much gold jewelry out there is unmarked. Mm-hmm. That's just one thing. And the pickers are going to come to your sale, and they're just going to pick you blind when it comes to that stuff.
Yes. One estate sale that I was visiting, I was waiting for line in, and I think it was El Cerrito, California, years ago. And I got to talking to a woman, and I looked the way she is. She had her fanny pack on. She had all these tools of the trade with her and everything like that. And I said, you know, I can just look in 5 seconds and say that you're a pro. I said, what got you started? I always like to ask people that. And she said, well, my very first estate sale I went to, she said, I bought a costume jewelry large stone ring for 10 cents and it ended up being a 5-carat diamond. So there's a point right there for the person that doesn't know.
Right. The primary reason, the two primary reasons people will do their own estate sale is, first one is likely they couldn't get a pro to help them. Mm-hmm. So if they couldn't get a pro to help them, read the 10 steps in the book. That'll help you figure out how to get a pro to at least look at it.
Yes.
To save you. The second reason, and this is the worst possible reason, you could do your own estate sale.
Save money.
Mm-hmm. You're like, I am not going to give that guy 30% or 35%. We could do it ourselves. Save the money and we'll go look it all up. And we'll look it up on the internet and we'll figure out what everything's worth and we'll price it all and we'll save ourselves 35% or 30%. This is a recipe for disaster. I went to a flea market, and I saw this guy, and he had this Native American jewelry at this flea market, and I liked it because I collect it. So I'm looking at this thing, and I'm like, whoa, I think I saw you here a year ago. He says, yeah, this is all my dad's stuff. Mm-hmm. I've been coming here every month, because it's a once-a-month flea market, monthly flea market, and I've been selling my dad's stuff. We had an estate sale a year ago for my dad. Wow, so how did that go? Well, we did it ourselves. So what did you bring in? They actually brought in $70,000, huh, doing it themselves. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right? But when I look at the stuff that he had there on his table, and I understand that his father was a collector, all I can make up is that the $70,000 they collected was probably way too little.
Yes.
And much of what he was selling at estate sale probably belonged in an auction, mm-hmm, where it might have got two or three times as much. When we say liquidating an estate, we're talking about selling personal property. We're not talking about auction. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about estate sale, yard sale. We're talking about a strategy, a holistic strategy for what am I going to do with this personal property? How am I going to manage the sale of this personal property? Which venue is the best venue to represent the value of this particular item? And this guy that sold everything for $75,000, which was, again, a pile of money, right, for an estate sale. This is high dollar figure. I can pretty much bet that he left many, many tens of thousands of dollars on the table because he didn't hire a professional. Because him and his family did not want to pay that fee.
Yes. Yep. Seen that many times.
So in the book, so this guy collected, Native American stuff and had all kinds of crazy stuff, but he also had Native American stuff. Maybe he had the chief's blanket that the second phase chief's blanket that I describe in my book is having sold for $1.5 million.
Yeah.
All right. So he saved money, but that's penny wise and pound foolish. Uh-huh. Right. Have somebody triage at the very least. Okay. You're going to save money. Mm-hmm. You're not going to pay that fee, those outrageous scoundrels do that, but first have a pro triage your sale. Mm-hmm. There's nothing worse than selling something for a dollar that's worth $3,000. There's nothing worse than selling a second phase chief's blanket for $500 and it's worth $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. Have somebody who knows, at least triage, look through it, do a quick appraisal.
This is all well and good. And let's just talk about some of the fun stories of some of your estate sales. There's got to be some things that have happened that are very memorable.
Every estate sale is a fun story.
Yeah.
And I both want to remember them and forget them.
Now, I'm sure, and I've come across this many, many times, is what they call American hoarders. You know, there are people that hoard. Before we get into the stories, I wanted just to ask you that. Are there a number of times when you just see this and get totally overwhelmed and say, I'm sorry, I can't help you?
Have I ever walked away? So it's kind of like saying, hey, Martin, have you ever walked away from a hoarder house?
Yes.
I have not.
You have not?
No.
There's some, and that is really taking on.
I don't know why I have not walked away from a hoarder house. Again, if the house was a hoarder house of food and the food was rotting, I would walk away. Because it's a biohazard.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. If there are, you know, if there are other kinds of hazards, chemical hazards, things like that, I would walk away. Mm-hmm. Okay. Every hoarder house that I've done, and I've done about six of them, has proved to be a little treasure trove of value and antiques or money. So I like hoarder houses. Mm-hmm. I like the going through it. I have to say that of all the kinds of houses that you could go into, the hardest house to deal with is a hoarder house. And it's not just because there's a bunch of stuff. It's because there's something, there's so much contraction, emotional contraction in a hoarder house. And you have to go into this house and figure out how to manage the organization of a mound of personal property that nobody in the family could figure out how to manage. Mm. And now you are going to add management to this pile of stuff that nobody could figure out how to manage. So it's an emotional quagmire, and the contraction is just amazing. The hardest chapter I had, that is covered in my book, that, you know, Was My Mom a Hoarder is the name of the title of that of that particular chapter, and it was the hardest chapter to write because it's so much judgment in the idea, is my mom a hoarder? Was my dad a hoarder? Was my uncle an old coot that collected trash? What, you know, who were these people? There's embarrassment at having, you know, any kind of connection to this kind of phenomena. But I don't take it that way at all. I take it like this person had developed a very successful strategy to stay safe in the world, and it was called gathering a bunch of stuff. You know, and that's what they did.
Yeah.
And I give strategies for how to deal with the hoarder house in the book, and a story of how we found somewhere around $25,000 in silver coins, and almost the last possible place one could look after, you know, 6 days of crew going through the house. And in the last minute, basically, we find this. It's a trunk. How do you like that? A treasure in a trunk. That's the perfect metaphor, right?
Yeah.
And it was full of coins.
Wow. Now let's hear a couple of extraordinary events that have unsurfaced. Now, I know you've gotten some big ticket money for some things that you have found in places. But anything, like, really unusual stand out to you in some of your estate sales? Like, let's talk about finds. Finds that you were unaware of, like this $25,000 worth of coins. Just a couple of examples.
Well, I mean, there's 20 examples in the book of things that I literally found in houses that if you took those 20 things and you sold them, they'd be worth about a little more than $1 million for 20 items.
Wow.
These could have been found in anybody's houses. I did not find any of these treasures in a millionaire's house. I didn't find any of these treasures in a mansion. I did not find any of these treasures in the better part of town. I found all of these treasures in common, everyday, middle-class people's homes. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, there's everything in there.
Let's throw a couple of examples out.
Okay, so there's a little old lady. A little old lady, she lived in Antioch, California, which is a little town that hugs the eastern part of the San Francisco Bay.
Yeah. And they've gone through quite a financial disaster in the number of years with house properties dropping in that particular town.
In that particular town, yes. Mm-hmm. She had been, they were German. Her and her husband lived in America most of the last 50 years. He had worked, I don't know how or why, but he'd worked with the U.S. military, retired. They called me, this woman, I don't remember her name actually. I'd have to go look in my records. And she says, Mr. Codina, I'd like you to come out to take a look at these paintings. I want to sell them to you. And some silver. I said, okay, how'd you get my name? She said, well, you sent us a flyer 5 years ago. She'd been holding this flyer for 5 years.
Yes, people do.
I drive out there, and I look at the paintings, and she says, I want you to give me a price on them. I said, I don't even know what these things are. Mm-hmm. This is about 8 years ago. Nobody was walking around with all the wired technology that they have today. We couldn't access our databases, you know, on the road.
Smartphones.
We had to go home and look in our books to do that, right? And I told her, I can't tell you. She says, I really strongly suggest that you consign your silver and your paintings with me, and I will get you the best possible price I can for them. Mm-hmm. I need to do research. Nope. She did not want me.
Yep.
She didn't want to consign it. She wanted to know what her end game was. And this is an example. This is a good example for everybody out there that has a strategy of like, I don't want to consign. I want to know right now, what am I going to get? What's the amount I am going to get? And I looked at her and I said, if you insist upon me giving you a bid on these paintings and I don't know what the paintings are, I will offer you $3,500. Mm-hmm. And she looked at me. She thought about it really strongly. And then she said, no. Mm-hmm. Which was the smartest thing she could have possibly have said. And we kept talking. And finally she decided, okay, maybe consignment was a better deal for her.
Uh-huh.
And we consigned them. And we took this painting that was a group of paintings, and the one that was the most impressive, we put it into an auction in Northern California, and the auction estimate was $7,500. Okay, folks, we went from $3,500 for a group of paintings to $7,500. If I had bought them at all this and sold this painting for $7,500, it would not have been an unethical, tragic thing for this family. It would have been okay.
Yeah.
Right? It would have been fine. Within the right, you know, mathematical calculus for ethical picking. Mm-hmm. And it also showed that I wasn't far off the mark in my thinking, standing there in the field without.
Yes.
Okay, so, but then here's what happens. I put it in the auction. A month later, when the auction actually has already occurred, a day later, I never saw, you know, I wasn't keeping track of it. A day later, the auctioneer calls me up. He says, Martin, have you heard about the auction? I like, heard about the auction? Auctioneers don't call you up and go, did you hear about the auction?
Yeah, I do. When something really takes off, I do.
I didn't. Well, in those days, I didn't know, you know. Says, yeah, the painting, the Gertner painting, it sold for $250,000. And I was driving. I was like, I just started screaming. What, are you absolutely out of your mind?
Yeah.
$250,000.
And they had it estimated at $7,500.
They had it estimated for
$7,500. Wow. Wow.
Turned out to be very, very important. And this goes back to what I said earlier. The guy who's got the $75,000 estate sale, and he's thinking, let's pat myself on the back. I just got $75,000 mm-hmm. for all the stuff in my house.
And I saved money.
Right? And I saved money mm-hmm. on the commission. And what did I say back then? I said, if you have an item that will benefit, whose value will increase through competitive bidding, mm-hmm. that's the item you put in an auction.
Yes.
And this is what was happening with this painting. The only possible way for that painting to have gone up to $250,000 is for two or three people to really want it in an extraordinary way and really to go head to head, which you know because you're an auctioneer, Martin.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't know that. Mm-hmm. Back earlier in our discussion, it's the story mm-hmm. that adds the value. And this painter was a painter that painted the story of Berlin. Mm. Okay, he'd been painting the story of the changing skyline of Berlin. It turns out he's the guy when you want to know what was happening in Berlin at a certain time period, what buildings were where, you go to his paintings. His paintings serve as architectural record of Berlin.
Wow, that's quite an extraordinary story.
The more extraordinary story to me is the story of somebody not finding someone to help them. Now, in this particular story, I told you what I did was with this woman was is I immediately went into act as this woman's advocate. She's the one that said, sell it. Sell it, give me a price. I said, let me consign it. They look good. This could bring you some dough. Let me help you. The tragic story is when it doesn't happen that way.
Yes.
It's when somebody buys the painting for $3,500 and it turns out to be worth $250,000. So the tragic story to me, the story you need to really, really understand is if you don't seek qualified experts to help you figure out what to do with your personal property, you will get picked.
All right. Well, hey, where can someone find your book? Again, the name of the book is called Liquidating an Estate, How to Sell a Lifetime of Stuff, Make Some Cash, and Live to Tell About It. And where would someone find that? Amazon?
You can find it on Amazon. You can find it on at Barnes & Noble. And I'm tickled to say that you can also find iTunes. You can go on iTunes and plug my name in, Martin Codina, and my book comes up. And you can download it for your iPad. You can download it again on for your Kindle, you know, on Amazon.
And Fine Estates Liquidation, Inc., what's your website?
Well, we have two principal websites. Our local to San Francisco estate sales service website is finesf.com. And our blog talks a lot about estate sales, estate liquidation, gives news and information about trends nationwide is fineestateliquidation.com.
Very good. So I'm with Martin Codina, and that's it for today. Thanks, Martin.
Thank you so much.
This podcast is sponsored by WorthPoint. Find out what your antiques are worth at worthpoint.com.